Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
There's a public service announcement. This is only a test.
We are an operating company. We fund, we build, and we operate bridges for the long term. We take all the risk, 100% of the money up front. We can earmark it, and we'll walk through how we've done that in six other bridges in five other states over the last 6 years. I could spend a lot of time on inflation, and we can come back to it, but the costs are going through the roof. And we're seeing it everywhere, and I gave you some examples on that. So whatever you end up doing and deciding, sooner is better, is the easiest way I can say it.
So this is Doug Witt. He was doing the presentation on Thursday to the Santa Rosa County Commission meeting about the prospect of building a new Navarre Beach Bridge, which, of course, does need to be done. Everybody knows this needs to be done. Nobody's really willing to talk too much about how that's going to happen and how it's going to get funded, more importantly. And, you know, is there or isn't there going to be a toll, of course, is the practical takeaway question that everybody has. And they came and gave a presentation on Thursday, and the basic idea was that instead of normal operations where the, you know, this county would go to the state, hey, give us a little bit of money, we'll put some money in, and then let's build a bridge, and then you guys can figure out how, you know, much of a toll we're going to put on it. This company will come in, and they will put the money in up front to build the bridge. Like, they're going to build it. It's going to be their bridge. They're going to build the bridge, and then they're going to operate it. And then they're going to charge a toll, and the county doesn't even have to maintain it. They're going to maintain it, and we'll have a replacement bridge that'll be good for another, you know, 40, 50, 60 years, whatever.
We would earmark and write a check for several hundred million dollars, put it aside from beginning to finish. There would be no risk on getting the money to get this project done. Secondly, we take all the risk on the cost, and it's all equity. There's a reason why we do all equity. Garcon Point would be one reason why you do all equity.
Ooh, that's a dirty word. Don't talk about the Garcon Point Bridge. But he's right. The whole idea of the Garcon Point Bridge, the problem is that you had bankers built a bridge. And then when the bank didn't make very much money, they just raised the rates because they didn't know how to operate a bridge and they didn't care. They were just wanted the return on, you know, right? And so eventually you get this exorbitant toll, and that's when, you know, eventually, long time, Governor DeSantis comes in and says, now, we'll just take that bridge from your hands and we'll pay you for it and then we'll be done with this. And, you know, it's not free, but it's, you know, significantly reduced, right? So they're here to live in the community. Their goal isn't particularly to build or design a bridge. Their goal is like the toll operator.
We're not a construction company. We're not a design engineering company that comes and does the project and leaves. When the bridge is done, we just begin our work. And that's why we've been there in South Norfolk, Jordan for 10 years. We are in the customer service business at the end of the day, and we live at 30,000 to 40,000 bridge crossings a day across six bridges in five states.
So again, the whole idea of their presentation is that they just, you know, you got to get a bridge built in order for them to be able to charge a toll, in order for them to operate the bridge and, you know, do what they do. But they're not big into design. They're going to hire somebody to design. They're not big into construction. They're going to hire somebody to construct it. And it's just going to be a wider, nicer, newer, usable, non-semi-decrepit version of the Navarre Causeway.
Navarre Beach Causeway replacement. It'd be a new four-lane bridge, bike lane, all the Coast Guard channel requirements, et cetera, and, you know, 24 to 36 months construction time from start to finish once you get through permitting agreements, things like that, if there's any stuff like right-of-way or things like that.
So start now, be done in 3 years, and, you know, 2027, you could have a new bridge, right?
We're going to be the lowest cost for one reason alone. If you wait a year, it's going to be $20 million to $40 million more to replace it, given where we are right now.
Every moment you wait, the cost goes up. That's the basic problem, because just generally because of inflation, but particularly the inflation of construction costs has been just unbelievable. And that's kind of the idea, is they're saying, look, we know it's expensive and it sucks and nobody wants to pay a toll, but what's your alternative? The longer you wait, the more it's going to cost. You put it off already, and because you weren't saving for, I mean, he doesn't say this, but it's true. It's also true for the beach bridge in Pensacola, right? The Bob Sykes Bridge has not been properly prepared for, just like the Perdido Bridge has not been properly prepared for. You know, there's no, like, escrow account out there waiting to pay off that bridge that you've been gradually putting all the tolls into all these years. You know, it's supposed to be that way, but that's not how it's been done. And that's not at any in particular person's feet, but over the course of time, everybody's collectively responsible for failing to do this, right? All of your leaders, which ultimately means us, you know, because we elect them. Anyway, so Navarre, same situation. There's no pot of money sitting around waiting that had been collected over time with, like, ad valorem money or whatever.
So if we're over on time, if we're over on cost, that's on us. It's not like, oops, sorry, you need to come up with the difference. That's on us. And that's part of the risk.
Yeah, so if it goes over, if they're wrong, they eat that.
Another reason why we do all equity, and another reason why we like to do it quickly, is we want to keep this at the lowest cost possible to keep the tolls as low as possible, because we want people using the bridge.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, you might think it's bad for the toll operator to be the one building the bridge. I think it's the other way around. I think it's better for the toll operator than for the builder, because then all of the costs are on them, and they're going to want to keep that down because they know that even though there's not a great alternative to driving over the Navarre Beach Bridge, the new one, there's, you know, theoretically, anybody coming from Pensacola could go 399 across the Gulf Islands National Seashore. It's slow, but at some point you do that, just like at some point you don't pay the Garcon Point Bridge, you take 98 to Three Mile Bridge, or you go up 87, right, because the toll's not worth it, right? The juice isn't worth the squeeze, to quote the aphorism. And so he says, look, we understand that we got to keep the rate relatively reasonable. Otherwise, people either won't go to Navarre Beach or they'll just go around somewhere. Of course, you know, at some point, Pensacola, you know, this Escambia County is going to build another bridge, and that's going to cost money, and it's going to be more than a buck, you got to assume. And if it's more than a buck, then it starts to be, you know, well, which one costs the least, right? So how did the basic three alternatives here are, number one, you rebuild the bridge in its basic footprint as it is right now, $150 to $200 million, and then your crossing costs are like 2.5 to 3.5 per, okay, 250 to 350, somewhere in that vicinity. That's kind of the idea. Option number two is that you would start at 87 at the intersection of 98 and 87, which is what everybody kind of assumes is going to happen. I mean, at least I do, because that's the one that makes sense, is you should take 87, should go straight across to Navarre. There's no reason to have that little jog that causes all your traffic. There's no reason to have that. Or a lot of your traffic anyway. So you take 87, you cross right across 98, and then you go a little bit west. There's a pretty large, open, undeveloped area to the west, and you cross there. And you just don't even have the other intersection. I mean, like, you know, Juana's and the stoplight and all that stuff would just be completely different, okay? That's option number two. That's 250 to 300 million. That's a 4.25 to 520 per crossing option. And this is what they were proposing. And then the third one is you start at 87, just the same, but then you go southeast and you meet up halfway with the current bridge design. And I would imagine that there are some construction benefits to that, some maintenance of right-of-way issues, but that one doesn't have an estimated cost or estimated toll. It would be less. I mean, it would be less, but maybe not a lot less, because, you know, you still have to build a significant amount of bridge. It's not the most direct crossing route. It's probably going to be more like that second option of 4.25 to 5.20, but it has the advantage of putting traffic where it currently goes, closer to the pier, right at the stoplight, you know, right at Juana's and the gas station. Anyway, so those are your options. So how did the commissioners react? Well, let me remind you of a key fact. You ready? Key fact. The year is 2024. What happens in November? There's an election in November. So commissioners in the great county of Santa Rosa, in the great county of Florida, are being presented with the prospect of buying a toll bridge in an election year to replace a bridge that is currently free. What do you think they're going to say? This is not hard to figure out. Now, they're not all up for re-election. Kerry Smith, who wasn't at the meeting, I think wasn't at the meeting. Anyway, I don't have any clips from him. I don't remember him talking much. And Ray Eddington, which it's his district in Navarre, but they all have everybody's district. It's, you know, open districts. And, you know, he's not up for re-election anyway, but he understands.
I want to do something for the Santa Rosa people and the people who lives on that beach about not paying a toll, because that's kind of rough. They're going back and forth across all the time. I think we can work it out somehow.
So he says, wave your magic wand and make it free. Colton Wright says one of the things that had been pointed out earlier in the conversation is that Florida doesn't get nearly the kind of money from the feds that you might think we should get based on our population size because, well, the Biden administration appears to be punishing Florida for disobeying it a lot, like during COVID. And if you look at the numbers, that's accurate. I have a whole chart I rabbit holed a little bit yesterday on how much money comes to the Department of Transportation, and the facts do seem to bear that out, that though we are third in population, we run more like sixth or seventh in terms of funding, and states like New Jersey are ahead of us, which is, you know, crazy. Anyway, so Colton Wright says,
appreciate you pointing out Secretary Perdue's comments in Congress. It's
Transportation Secretary.
Pretty unfortunate that state of Florida is being the third largest state in the union, that and I believe it's probably that we're being penalized for having a strong economy in our current political climate, that we're not getting our fair share. I find that to be very troubling. But regardless, that's the situation we're in.
Yeah, I mean, that is the reality, okay? He mentions that if Pensacola had to replace Bob Sykes, it's not going to be a buck, which is certainly true. Unless they just, you know, unless Escambia County decides to come up with some miracle cure, which, you know, so far has not been forthcoming. There was also, you know, he asks questions like, well, what prevents you from just shutting it down? I mean, right now we have the advantage of it's a publicly owned bridge. What if you build your bridge and you just decide to stop maintaining it? And he says, well, that would be in our agreement. Maintenance would be provided for by them as part of the deal. So county doesn't have to spend any money on maintenance or FDOT. What prevents you from jacking up the tolls? Well, the fact that we're trying to recoup our investment and we're not idiots. And also he says, I just wouldn't because I'm a baby boomer and I have a certain set of values. And then kind of a moment that was interesting because you know about the Garcon Point Bridge. You know about the history of it. You know about how much of a debacle it was with the overextended, you know, the very, very high toll rates and why people weren't using it and how the governor basically had to come in and rescue it to even make it something that people would use more regularly. This, it turns out, is a nationally known example of how not to do bridges.
By the way, Garcon Point may be local to you, but it's local to us in the state of Washington or the state of New York or anywhere else we would go, because that is a, everybody in America seems to know about that one.
Let me just leave it there.
It is a well-known failure. That's the idea. So James Caulkins, who is also up for re-election in an election year, Colton Wright is up for re-election. James Caulkins is up for re-election and never wanted to pass up a chance to electioneer.
I am fully opposed to a toll to do a new bridge. And I'll tell you what, we need a new bridge. And so people ask, well, if I'm opposed to a toll, how are we going to get a new bridge? Well, it's happened before.
Yeah, it's true. 3 Mile Bridge was potentially going to be a toll. And depends on who you ask. But the most common version of this story is that Don Gates, when he was in the Senate, was instrumental in making that not happen. I've heard other accounts of it, but the takeaway is that it is possible to have a massive, you know, nearly $500 million bridge wind up in 440, I think is what it wound up being in the end, bid at 390. But, you know, that bridge wound up having no toll on it, as we well know. And if that's been possible in the past, well, maybe it's possible to do it again in the future. Exactly how, you know, I don't know, but maybe it can be done.
We got history that it is possible, and we got proof that it's possible to build a bridge without a toll. But we just need the right people in place. We need the right circumstances.
Yeah, and so the basic argument here is, look, if, and he said this specifically, if you get Don Gates in the fall in the Senate, which is the most likely outcome, he's already powerful, and if his son, he didn't say this, but if his son does run for governor and does win, that's a lot of power and money that could potentially come to the panhandle. I'll tell you, on the one hand, I understand the reasoning, and we've done it in the past, and I think it'd be politically stupid, frankly, to bring this in an election year as a toll bridge. I think that's kind of on them, though. They should have realized that and not pitched it. They should have waited till December to pitch this. That would have been a much more reasonable conversation. There's no way commissioners are going to vote for a toll bridge in the summer before an election. It's just not going to happen. So I think what they should have done is waited until December, and then you could have a more rational discussion about this. James Calkins, again, has this idea, like, we can get magic money from Tallahassee if we get the right people in there. Which is kind of a weird, like, generally conservatives are against pork, but yet conservatives are kind of, it's not pork per se, it's sort of an essential transportation product, but they're kind of against that idea of getting their money back from Tallahassee or from the feds or whomever. But this is the thing we're complaining about, is we're not getting our money back. So it's kind of a weird sort of way to talk about government. But I don't disagree with them. Even Sam Parker says, you know, he's not willing to vote for a toll. And he also says that Joe Biden is bad. And his idea is that maybe if we get the right president, we can get this funded, right? If Trump gets elected, then, you know, he'll like Florida and we can have this partnership between DeSantis and him. So they killed it. They said, no, don't. This is not a starter. I think it's not a starter now. The problem is they're all on record being against it. And so there's no point for them to come back in December or January or anything like that. So this whole proposal is done. And now we're back to hope. Hope is our plan. Hope for winning the election. Hope for money from Tallahassee or from D.C. And talk to us after the election, because right now we're not willing to make any decisions. That's where we're at. 526 on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test.
My friends swim no matter the season, but my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can sometimes take me out of the moment. Now, thanks to Skyrizi and clear skin, count me in. With Skyrizi, Risen Kizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. 3 out of 4 people achieve 90% clear skin at 4 months.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. And visit SkyRizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Okay, let's talk about renovation and how it's not like your ordinary happy ending home makeover show. Example, they are the guys who prey on homeowners and never show up to do the work. So that's why the state of Florida licenses contractors. You can check if your contractor is licensed at the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation website at myfloridalicense.com.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
They're not going to catch us. We're on a mission from God.
Good morning, 529 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. Somebody texts in and says, so we're going to wait 6 or 7 months and then the bridge will cost $20 or $30 million more. Yeah, that's right. That's it. But then maybe we'll get magic fairy dust money from Tallahassee or from D.C. And, oh, by the way, if we're voting on an impact fee for transportation, maybe it'll come from that. Well, I thought we were voting on that to improve capacity on, you know, congested roads. Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes. Okay. But we'll see what happens when, you know, push comes to want a bridge, right? David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
You know, I could use some of that magic fairy dust money. Is there any of that floating around?
Yeah, funny thing is the magic fairy dust money is the reason you have inflation. Just saying. So, whatever. Exactly. Go on.
Well, so at least 23 people now have died as severe weather impacted parts of the central and southern U.S. Sunday saw one of the most active severe storm days of the year so far, with thunderstorms and high winds hitting parts of the Northeast. Also today, closing arguments set to begin in Donald Trump's trial in New York.
Yeah. Backwards, right? The prosecution is going to go last, is what they're reporting top of the hour in Fox.
I think so, yeah.
Everything I know about these trials is not in real life. It's based on TV and movies, but I always figured the defense goes last because you have last chance to respond to anything. And that's what Trump is claiming, too. And so that seems weird to me.
Fox News, and I'm Chris Foster. The jury in former President Trump's criminal hush money trial in New York hears attorneys' closing arguments today.
Deliberations could begin as early as tomorrow. Former President Trump is charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. He has pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors say he falsified those records to cover up campaign finance violations.
Fox's Tanya J. Powers. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says an airstrike killing Palestinian civilians, injuring hundreds, is a tragic accident. But the war to destroy Hamas will not end.
The attack at a tent camp housing displaced Palestinians killed at least 45 people. Israel's military initially called it a precise airstrike on Hamas compound, but opened an investigation once details of the deadly strike emerged.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer. The United Nations Security Council's called an emergency meeting today about the strike. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio Pensacola. It is 72 degrees. Looks like mostly clear skies right now. An arrest has been made in a domestic violence-related shooting in Atmore. Police say 62-year-old Fred Dale was arrested after officers were called to that shooting in the 100 block of Terrace Street early on Monday morning. Details surrounding the shooting have not yet been released. Dale currently being held without bond at the Escambia County, Alabama jail. Right now, there's no word on his charges or the condition of the victim. Well, the U.S. Navy Blue Angels, now a top draw on Amazon's Prime Video service. The new Blue Angels documentary, which, of course, was in Pensacola theaters just in the last week, has debuted last week on Amazon Prime Video, quickly took the number one spot on the platform. That documentary filmed with IMAX cameras and shows the Angels as they train and prepare for their flight season. The film is streaming now. An incident report and a 911 call have been released in the case of senior airman Roger Fortson, who was shot by an Okaloosa County deputy earlier this month. In the 911 call, a neighbor at Fortson's apartment complex reported that an argument had been ongoing for quite some time, then told the dispatcher she'd heard gunshots.
And just for now, we're trying to clear the scene too, okay?
Okay. Is everybody okay?
I can't answer that. Okay. But we do have help on the way.
Okay.
A 30-page incident report was also released to Channel 3. However, nearly all of the information in that report was redacted. Fortson was laid to rest in his hometown in Georgia earlier this month. The family has hired attorney Ben Crump. It is 5:33, News Radio Pensacola. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. It is going to be a very warm day today with temperatures warming up near 94 degrees for your high. Mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 73. For Wednesday, 20% chance of a stray shower. Otherwise, mostly sunny, high near 90. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 71. Keeping the nice forecast around for Thursday with hot, humid temperatures, high near 88. Temperatures overnight dropping into the low 70s. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 72 in Pensacola, 70 in Gulf Breeze, 69 in Milton. Your next news at 6 o'clock. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio Pensacola.
I'm Dom Savino with Your Money Now. Self-driving startup Waymo is facing increased scrutiny from federal auto safety regulators. That's after they learned of 9 more incidents, raising concerns about the road readiness of the autonomous vehicles. Regulators say several incidents involved collisions with clearly visible objects a driver would be expected to avoid. Last month's inflation data was better than expected, leading to hopes the Federal Reserve may cut interest rates sooner than later. But not so fast, says the latest Fed member to give an interview. On CNBC this morning, Minneapolis Fed President Neel Kashkari says he's looking for, quote, many more months of positive inflation data before considering a rate cut this year. In April, consumer prices rose by a less than expected 0.3% from the prior month, though inflation remained at a yearly pace of 3.4%. On Wall Street, futures are higher as investors prepare to kick off the holiday shortened trading week. It's been another great month for the market, which has seen the Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P all hit record highs. That's your money.
Waiting for a great finance rate on a great Volkswagen? Well, the wait is over. Now at Feed More Imports, eligible buyers can receive 0% APR for 60 months on the 2024 Volkswagen Taos. This sporty VW Taos S is waiting for you with 0% APR for 60 months or a discounted price of $24,491. And the 2024 Tiguan S discounted to $29,516 or take 2.9% APR for 60 months. The 24 Atlas Cross Sport SE with 2.9% APR for 60 months or a sale price of $36,206. And the Atlas SE with technology, now discounted $2,500 to $41,793 or take 2.9% for 60 months. Great Volkswagens, great rates, and a great family-owned dealership. Feed More Imports, 106 New Warrington Road, Pensacola.
Special APR rate in lieu of discounts and for qualifying credit through VCI. Sale price before tax, title, and associated dealer fees. See dealer for details.
Visit Pensacola is home for all things Pensacola. I'm Darren Schaefer, CEO of Visit Pensacola. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel this week as we discuss what is next for our community. This summer, get tips on the Blue Angels, beach time, and ways to help make sure your guests don't miss a thing. Thursday at 9:30, let us show you the way to beach.
In Pensacola, Pensacola Beach, and Perdido Key.
On News Radio 92.3.
We are Lions. We bring hope where it's needed. We are a global force for good. Support causes that matter. Change lives. Change communities. Change the world. We can do more together than we can alone. Join in. Experience the joy of serving. Be part of the movement. Give back. Let's unite the world for good. We are Lions. You can be too. Visit weserve.org.
Severe weather can strike at any time.
At any time.
New tornado warning just in effect now for Escambia and Santa Rosa counties.
At any time.
Very, very heavy rain here at the radio station. As a matter of fact, I believe our building is even out of power right now.
When you need to know.
So this is the warned area. Now a tornado warning in effect until 2:03.
Severe weather can strike at any time.
When you need to know.
News Radio Pensacola.
Informative, local, dependable.
What do you need, son?
Need to borrow your bow.
Let's drop some lead on those motherfuckers.
Light them up.
They ain't gonna sink this battleship, no way.
Verify our range to target. One ping only.
What's the range now?
200 miles, sir.
They break 150 miles, launch the alert 5 aircraft.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing? You're slowing down! You're slowing down!
I'm bringing them in closer, Merlin.
You're gonna do what?
I got a good lock. Firing.
Yes, with that introduction, it is the replay from Friday when we continued our series, Meet Your Tenant Commands. This is something I've been wanting to do for over a year and a half, I think, something like that. And the idea is, let's find out what happens on board NAS Pensacola, NAS Whiting Field, NAS Corey Station, things that most people don't really know. And we're starting with the aviation sector, but as you heard in the intro, there's all the sectors to come, and there's a lot of interviews we're going to be doing on this over probably the course of the next year or so. On Friday, we had a chance to talk to Captain Brad, callsign Redman, Arthur. He is the commanding officer at Naval Aviation Schools Command. Redman, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I appreciate you having me. And good morning to your Pensacola listeners.
Oh, no, it is great to have you. I'm so excited about teaching people what y'all do. So you have a really interesting position in the Naval Aviation Training Pipeline. You're step one, right? Officers come out of the academy. They come out of ROTC. They come out of OCS. And also some non-officers come to you straight from boot camp. And you are the first step that they ever take in terms of aviation training. Is that right?
That is correct, Andrew. I'm very fortunate for Naval Aviation Schools Command. We get to do the initial indoctrination into Naval Aviation for everyone that's going to be in an aircraft. So it's very exciting, exciting stuff to do. It's fun. You get to see the youth, the future coming in. And we do get about 3,000 officers and enlisted that come in a year that we indoctrinate into the first steps of Naval Aviation. So, it's fun, a lot of moving parts, and I'm very excited to have this opportunity to speak about it.
So when people talk about us being the cradle of naval aviation, they're really talking about your command, about Naval Aviation Schools. And so you said 3,000 a year. How many at a given time are in training going through your particular phase of the operation?
Well, on deck at any given time, it fluctuates a little bit with the officer side because of college graduation when they get commissioned. But you can look at it as about 700 officers on board at any given time and about 300 to 400 enlisted on board at any time, waiting, getting them through the process for training.
And how long does each side take? Like, how long does your portion of the officer training take?
Once we get the officers, when they check on board and can start going for our, when I talk about the officers, I'm talking about the student naval aviators, student naval flight officers, and now newly our student AVPs, which is aerial vehicle pilots. That's a new thing that's just started.
They go about drone operators, when they first get here. Right? Drone operators?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So when you talk about timing, but it takes about 8 weeks for us to get them when they first get here. Get their orders in. You know, they got to move into Pensacola, find a place to live. But then we got to get them through all the process, get them through the medical process, measure them, make sure that they're going to fit in certain cockpits, do all these prerequisites, we like to call it. And I call that the portion of knife zero, that naval aviation industry flight evaluation portion. And that would be the first step. So that takes about 8 weeks to get them ready. A lot of things in there. We also get them in swimming so that they can make sure that we get them safe. They have all the abilities to operate a naval aircraft with regards to flying over the water. And then we get them into knife one, which is the academics, and we put them through about 4 weeks of pretty intensive academics ranging from engines to aerodynamics to navigation to weather. And it's a very fast-paced 4 weeks, and anyone that's gone through it will tell you that it's taken a college-level course a week, almost a graduate-level course a week. So they have fun with that. Then I get them into flying. Takes about 6 weeks to do that. We fly them in the Cessna, mainly at Pensacola Regional. We fly them out of there. And then after that, we send them over to the dunkers and get them ready and send them off to the training wing, just like at Whiting Field, the training wing 5. I'll send them over to Fez's group up there, Colonel Crockle. Or I send them to Cricket White at training wing 6 and on Pensacola, and then some we send over to Corpus Christi. So you're looking at, you know, when we get them into the training, you're looking at about a 20-week to 23 weeks on average to get them through the pipeline.
But that's for everything. That's from start to finish, putting them in a fleet replacement squadron, right?
That's to get them to this, the training wing.
Oh, okay.
Just the training wing. So
thank you.
Training wings. Yep. And that's just the officer side of it. And then on the enlisted side.
Well, hold on. Let's pause there for a second, because I know it's a lot of terms that people might not know. And I just want to make sure everybody's getting it, because my goal is for them to get what you guys do. The officer side, you're training future pilots, future naval flight officers, which is backseaters, future rescue swimmers, and now the drone pilots that are warrant officers. And that's about your portion of it is about 8 weeks. You do all of this college education material, weather, engines, aerodynamics, all of that. And then part of that is also getting them in the Cessnas. But that's relatively new, right? In the past, and this is called KNIFE, Naval Introductory Flight Evaluation. It used to be what? API was the old name, is what they used to call it, and they didn't used to do any actual flying in this portion. Is that right?
Exactly. When I came through in 95, it was this API, and we did all the indoctrinating stuff that had nothing to do with physically flying the aircraft. All the academics, all of the swim quals and the dunkers and the medical, and get you all ready. Then they would, when you've graduated, you went to Whiting Field. I went to Whiting Field, or you went to Corpus Christi, or you stayed at Pensacola if you're a student naval flight officer, and you go to the training wings there, and then you get in your squadrons and you touch an aircraft for the first time. That changed years ago. It changed to where we were just going to different places and sending people to fly and assess them at different places around the country. And then we consolidated about 3 to 4 years ago here in Pensacola. And now it's under schools command. And we have a contract, and we just send them out to get some flying time, to get them ready, because the T-6 at Training Wing 4 and Training Wing 6 and Training Wing 5, that's a significant step into an aircraft. So we see the value of getting them in a Cessna prior to going to the T-6.
Interesting. Yeah, I had not known mm-hmm. that until I started doing some research to get this going. I didn't think any actual flying for beginning pilots took place at that first phase on board NAS Pensacola. I thought it was only basically the NFOs or at Whiting. So that was news to me, is that there was actually, you know, plane flying going on there. We'll come back to you in a second. We're talking to Captain Brad Arthur. He is the commanding officer at Naval Aviation Schools Command, what most people would think of as the beginning of pilot and also enlisted training. We'll talk about that in just a second. Yeah, see, this was also new information to me, is because I didn't realize that there was an enlisted training element under your command, but basically anybody who's going to get into an aviation platform, whether it's rotors, helicopters, or fixed wing, anything like that, many of those platforms have more than just the pilot. They have crew, and your air crewmen, they also begin under your training command. Is that right?
That is correct, and then it's a significant portion of naval aviation, and our enlisted air crewmen bring are critical to the mission success in our fleet for all of our aircraft. It is exciting. They come to boot camp and they come down here, and we do what we're doing for the pilots and NFOs and what I just talked about with the officers. We do the same thing, but in a different way with the enlisted that come in. And you know, we get them ready for coming out of boot camp. I could do the same thing. I got to get them physically checked and measured and make sure that they're good to go. And then we put them in the Naval Air Crew Candidate School, where they learn how to be an air crewman. And it's physical. We get them in the water as well, at water survival, and teach them a lot of stuff. And then from there, when they graduated, after about a six to eight week process, there's some that are going to be rescue swimmers, the ones that fly in helicopters and will go in the water and rescue someone. There's another school that we put them in, and that's the Air Rescue Swimmer School. And it's a one-of-a-kind, unique. It's the only one in the Navy, and it's here. And it is a significant training there, and it's really fun to watch, I'll tell you that. When they graduate from that course, they are very well trained. And they're ready to go out and save lives if called upon. That is the enlisted side.
Yeah, do the enlisted air crew, do they then go through that same subsequent process of learning the platform itself, you know, learning whether they're going to be on the E-2 or the whatever they're going to fly on? They have to learn that subsequent the same way pilots do?
Sure. So this is the primary, or just that indoctrination mm-hmm. portion. And so I get them ready. Then I'll send some will go to rescue summer school, but then they also go to NATSE, the Naval Air Technical Training Center, which is on Pensacola as well. And some, they'll do different courses there depending on what platform they're going to. If they're going to P-8s, it will be a certain amount of weeks. If they're going to fly in the 60 Romeo or Sierra, those timelines are a little different. It's now they're starting to get really specific for the aircraft they're going to.
Got it.
And there's various aircraft. Same with the Marine Corps as well. But from there, then they go off to out to other parts of the country and get into the fleet replacement squadrons that you mentioned, and then they continue on their follow-on training there. That is where they will end up getting their wings, is there.
Okay.
Just like the pilots and NFOs, you get your wings farther down the line. I'm just the beginning steps.
And just to make sure, because I don't want to misstate it, but and you may have said, and maybe people didn't hear, I didn't hear, but not just Navy, but Marines and Coast Guard, everybody who's in an aviation platform of any kind, or rescue swimmer or drone related, they are now starting under your command here at NAS Pensacola. So literally their first thing they do is in the Navy after boot camp, if they're enlisted, or after, you know, OCS, or, you know, college, ROTC, or the academy, is they come here first. Is that right?
That is correct. And that's why the Cradle of Naval Aviation is here in Pensacola. And the Naval Aviation Schools Command is that first part of that cradle. And that's every single person that is going to be in an aircraft that is in the Navy and the Marine Corps, the ones flying for the Coast Guard, and then a lot of our international partners out there. There's 18 different countries that we help train as well. But for our Navy and Marine Corps blue-green team, absolutely every single person that's in an aircraft out there in the fleet, they all start here in Pensacola.
Outstanding. Now, one thing that for civilians, it's a little bit mind-boggling to understand, not just the acronyms, but the order of authority chain of command. And here's where things get a little difficult to understand. Much of what happens, for example, for pilots and NFOs, comes under the Chief of Naval Air Technical Training, Sinatra. You are not under Sinatra. You are under Naval Aviation Schools Command, which reports to Naval Education Training Command, NETSI. And so your ultimate superior officer is Admiral Cherico, which is based on NES Pensacola, right?
That is correct. I am one of the learning centers, one of many learning centers that are under Admiral Cherico's command, NETSI, we like to call it. My customer is Sinatra, but my boss is NETSI. So it's a very good, well-understood relationship.
Sure.
That I know different things that I need to do for each command, but my boss is Admiral Cherico, and he is on Pensacola, as you said.
Right.
His command is vast. And any given day, there's about 37,000 sailors or Marines getting trained underneath entities that are under NETSI's command across the country.
And we will be talking with Admiral Cherico later on in the process, of course, because as you say, it's a huge command. I knew we'd run out of time before we ran out of questions. I have a real quick, give me your best guess on a 1 to 10 scale, how accurate is Officer and a Gentleman? Because that's the closest thing to what you do.
How accurate? Let's see. We'll give some of the technical stuff they do in there. We'll give it about a 6.
Okay.
We'll keep it at about a 6, I guess.
Okay. And we'll leave all of the drama and the other stuff aside, because that's its own question.
Yeah.
But that's the closest movie representation of what your job is, though apologies for the comparison. Captain Brad Arthur, callsign Redman, commanding officer at Naval Aviation Schools Command. Redman, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for what you do. Thank you for participating in this process and helping people get a little bit better picture of what goes on board NAS Pensacola, man. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your service now that you're coming to the end of your career here at Pensacola.
Thank you very much, Andrew. I appreciate it, and I wish you and all your listeners and your family there a meaningful Memorial Day. And thank you very much for taking the time.
Absolutely. And, of course, we did this interview on Friday. And, you know, it's funny because one of the goals I have in doing this series is I'm always helping them remember, too, is one of the barriers to understanding what the military does is that you don't speak the language, you don't speak the acronyms, right? And so he's there talking about NATSI and NETSI and Sinatra, and you're like, what now? So, okay, fair enough. But even in passing, like he's talking about the 60s, Sierras and Romeos, the helicopter, what you think you might know as the Army version would be the Black Hawk, or in the Navy would be the Pave Hawk. The Seahawk, Payhawk is Air Force. But that's the big, not the biggest helicopter, not the Sea Stallion, but the sort of in between size. So that's what he was talking about. And then, you know, Chief of Naval Air Technical Training, that's Sinatra, okay? And then you have Naval Education Training Command, that's NATSE, that's Admiral Cherico, based on board INS Pensacola. And so he reports to NATSE, but the rest of the training pipeline is typically under Sinatra. That's so, and I know that the acronyms, even KNIFE, you know, is one of these acronyms. You're like, well, what is KNIFE? Well, it's that it used to be one thing, but now that's the Naval. Oh my God! All of a sudden, I forget now. I don't want to get, and I don't want to tell it to you wrong either. But KNIFE is Naval Introductory Flight Evaluation. Thank you. Naval Introductory Flight Evaluation. That's a new one too. And that's a weird one for me to think of because in my head, I always want to spell KNIFE with a K. And as is typical in the military, well, they don't care about that. It starts with an N. So anyway, 5:55 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay.
My husband, Alex Hussey, was hit by an IED in Afghanistan.
I was point man on foot patrol and I stopped on the bomb. Lost my legs and left hand in an explosion.
And he suffered a severe traumatic brain injury.
As America's veterans face challenges, DAV is there.
There are so many mountains to climb, and we do it together.
With the right support, more veterans can reach victories great and small.
Seeing Alex learning how to snow ski, that's life-changing.
DAV provides a lifetime of support to veterans of every generation, helping more than a million veterans each year.
Alex did it. He skied down this mountain. That's something he won't forget.
With the right support, there are no limits.
To see him on that slope and smiling like that, we'll be taking this home.
This has meant so much. Thank you, DAV.
Alex Hussey, thank you for your service. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Unused prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for. Harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet. Or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
No man, no woman, no one left behind. For the VFW, it's a credo that stands long after our fighting days are over. Because our service never stops. We're still serving. Which is why we pledge to help our own, no matter where they are or when they need us. Standing in lockstep with those who stood so courageously for everyone else. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at VFW.org.
Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 10 when Dusty Studer, the Dean of the Warrington Campus at Pensacola State College, will be on the show, letting you know everything you need to know about summer and fall registration, available programs, financial aid, and so much more on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Pensacola right now with Joe and Austin.
It's like headline news for radio. Every day, 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
For the last time, I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
The Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
I just gotta get you off the cage. I'm a young lover's age. Gonna need a spark to ignite. My songs know what you did in the dark. So light 'em up, up, up. Light 'em up, up, up.
I see you chuckling, David Wayne. You appreciate a good Brondo reference, right?
Best documentary ever.
Pre-documentary. Best psychic documentary.
That's
ever.
Right.
Well, actually, when I worked in Oregon, some of the guys there had been around when the promotion for Idiocracy came out, and they had cans of Brondo.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Those would be a collector's item by
are.
Now. That'd be awesome.
What's going on in the newsroom, sir?
Well, North Korea says its attempt to launch a military spy satellite failed when that rocket exploded. State media says the failure was due to a newly developed rocket motor. The rocket blew up in a fireball, fell into the Yellow Sea just minutes after takeoff.
All right. Thanks so much for the update. Angel Hernandez is done, out, over. You never have to suffer from him blowing a call in a game again. He says it's to take time off. He's a baseball umpire, in case you don't know. Probably the most widely despised baseball umpire. He says it's to take time for family. I say the eclipse joke's got it.
On the fives, weekdays on News Radio 92.3 WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.